Hello and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast episode number 66, where we're sitting and waiting for Mr. John Shatner of Papa John's to come and talk about his involvement in this latest Ghostbusters movie that's got everyone talking and arguing and fighting. But we're not going to do that. We're just going to give an honest appraisal of the film and see what John has to say about it. We're also going to talk about Finding Dory as well. So a couple of different topics for today. Wanted to remind you all before we get into the thick of things that you should go to Twitter and follow us there, and Instagram and do the same thing, and share us on Facebook. And especially, we want you guys to head over to iTunes and give us a review. Let us know what you think. We hope it's positive. And we hope you click that five-star button. But we'd really appreciate some love on the iTunes side of things. So yeah, we could try to find some sponsors to keep this thing going, as the money printing machine has been suddenly repossessed by the feds. So in lieu of that, we'd love to get some sponsors and bring you guys some more exciting content. And we know that we got some people out there listening, and we appreciate that. We appreciate all you guys have done so far for us on the social media, and we hope that continues a little bit. As I said, we're talking about Ghostbusters and Finding Dory, and I think that's everything I had to plug. All right, hit it, boys.
Third time's a charm.
So this is the first podcast with the new logo.
Yeah, new logo. Yeah. Looks good.
I like it. Yeah.
You got to keep these things fresh every so often.
Yeah. Yeah, like Apple.
Yeah.
Did you
Now it's out now without color.
Now totally flat. Did you ever see the first Apple logo?
No.
It was this picture of like Isaac Newton sitting under a tree and some kind of a it was like a little rectangle thing.
Oh man, that's the one. Well, I like the new Apple better.
What, the flat design Apple?
Yeah, just the apple with the bite in it.
Yeah. It was between the bite or no bite, and apparently the bite made it look less like a cherry.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, it looks like a butt or something on the top, you know. So, I can see why the bite would... I mean, it totally looks like an apple that way.
Oh, yeah. No, it's brilliant. Simple. Clean. So, all right.
So, yeah. So, we have a new logo.
We have a new logo. Very exciting stuff. So we want to thank our sister, Elizabeth, for yeah, taking the time.
Homie operation here.
And working without pay.
Yeah.
She literally was just bored. Like, hey, listen, I designed this for you because I had nothing else to do in the last 10 minutes. And she pointed out that our logo is actually better than the NPR logo for the Pop Culture Happy Hour, which is true.
Yeah.
I can't say that the podcast is better than them. I haven't listened to them more than once.
It's okay. They do an okay job.
Yeah. It's not too ridiculously left-wing.
Well, they sound like NPR, the stereotype of NPR, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's kind of low, and they talk. And a lot of dead air and very close to the microphone. I don't know why. And I've heard the same people... DJ, can you call it DJing, if that's what they're, but working at NPR and then going to work for a regular rural commercial station, and they're like, oh, wacky, and here we go. And like, that's the same guy? You know, but they have such a theme going on over there.
Good morning, Vietnam.
It's this, yeah, honest to God. In one situation, he's the church lady. And the other one, it's Robin Williams. So.
I guess that's like, you know, like when actors have different headshots of them doing, like laughing, and then one of them crying. Look at my range, you know? Yeah.
Serious face, the smolder. That's my favorite. I used to work.
The smolder.
I used to work in a lot of theaters in New York, and sometimes you'd be at a theater, either seeing a show or working, and there would be like a showcase going on, so like several plays going on in the same small theater. And there'd be a board with everybody in the show's headshot because you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get an agent or you're trying to get a different job. And it was hilarious. Just, I've never taken headshot photography or been photographed for it. So it, the range of, you know, serious faces you have to get is, I can't imagine how they would come up with it. You know, I just think of that scene in How I Met Your Mother where Robin goes for the job of the lottery girl.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy's like, could you be a bit more wry about the number six? Yeah. And the one guy's like, she doesn't even, like, something like she wants to be here. What's her problem? And it's taking it way too seriously.
That was great. You know, like they nod to each other.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's acting, I guess. There you go. That's why I don't act anymore.
Speaking of acting, you saw a film recently.
Yeah, I saw Ghostbusters.
You're the one. Well, that's not true. Everybody's seen Ghostbusters.
No, that's not true. Yeah, a lot of people. They have assigned seats at the mall where I went. So I got there. Okay, first of all right, here's my experience. I get there to the kiosk outside because I don't want to pay for a ticket ahead of time if we have assigned seats. So I go to the kiosk, swipe him a card, machine freezes up.
Nice.
It's like, all right, well, I'll just use this other machine. And then I realize it's probably processing my credit card information and stealing it or something. Like, as I sit here buying another ticket. Sure enough, I use the second machine and out comes two tickets. So now I have two tickets to a movie that I'm going to see by myself. So I explained this to the guy at customer service and he was like, yeah, it's no problem. I'll change it. Although we really recommend you get here before the movie. I'm like, no, that's not the issue. It's not like my date couldn't come. The machine screwed up.
I didn't get stood up, jackass.
Yeah, I'm not lonely. Like, I am a little, but not enough that I would, you know, fake having a date and just. And then I get there and it's, you know, after the credits are starting because I don't care and I have an assigned seat and there's like a summer youth camp there.
Oh no.
And they're all sitting in the middle, like they just decided to take up all the seats. So there's some snot-nosed kids sitting in my seat and I'm not going to be the one asshole who makes a move so I can sit in the middle of this gaggle of kids.
Because then there's like, I can just see like a camera panning slowly over all these kids, and then there's you right in the middle, like a creep.
Yeah, like no popcorn, no soda. It's 11:30 in the morning on a Tuesday, and there I am with all these summer camp kids.
Probably a good idea to lie low there.
Yeah, so I had to sit way closer than I wanted to. That was real annoying.
That's really funny. Oh, Christ.
Yeah. That's like when I went to see Juno, and it was me and 60 girls at the age of 14. That was horrible.
For the film
and the movie was good, but I was like, oh, my God. My period is syncing up with everybody else in this room. It was horrible.
For the film about teenage pregnancy? Really?
Yeah, well, our sister was young at the time.
Oh, you went with her?
Yeah, I had to go with her.
Oh, God. She's hiding in the back.
I liked it. It was
supposed to be a good movie. I never saw it. I meant to.
Yeah, it was cute. You know, Ellen Page was good, but it's just, I was so out of place.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit.
Yeah. So I saw Ghostbusters.
And we're now waiting for, what's his name, John Shatner? Shetner?
I don't know, you called him, I don't know.
Papa John.
That's how Papa John.
That's how I referred to him. Well, I saw that he made a cameo appearance in the film.
Oh, did he? I didn't see him. Maybe because I was so fucking close to the screen.
Well, I don't see. Okay, so full disclosure, I have not seen Ghostbusters. I saw the 45-minute review that the Red Letter Media guys put out from their Half in the Bag series.
Yeah, and anybody who doesn't know, they should check them out.
Yeah, because they're really great.
They're called Red Letter Media. They have like a movie production company, and they do movie reviews, and they're usually pretty good. Sometimes they let one slip by, but I'm sure they would say the same about us.
Did you watch that, by the way?
The review?
Yeah,
I watched it.
Yeah, that was hilarious. And I only regret not having a bottle of Crystal Skull vodka.
Yeah,
that we could share.
Movie reviews, for the record, are better when you're drinking.
Oh yeah.
And they were drinking in that review, so it made it a little funnier.
That guy was so drunk by the end of it. You kept looking at like this skull head of vodka. It's getting emptier and emptier.
They were drinking it with Ecto Cooler.
Which. Apparently, we now have to do.
Yeah, it's back.
It's back for a limited time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As is the nostalgia for this movie. Yeah. So it appeared that Papa John, I'm just gonna call him that when he gets here too, made a cameo in the film.
That's what Peyton Manning calls him in all those commercials.
Does he?
He calls him Papa.
Chapo. Christ. So yeah, he appeared to be in the film. So I started, we'll get him. That's a fresh take on something, you know, a different. So I haven't heard back, but I gave him the date, time, and the address, and so we'll see what happens. But cool. This movie has spawned a tremendous amount more controversy than I think anybody anticipated it doing.
Yeah, I think it did. Did it, and we just hear like people are very loud about it?
Well, here's the thing that I took from the review and from the review that you wrote, and it was an absolutely terrible abortion of a film, right?
I thought so.
Yeah.
And so did that Red Letter Media review. There were plenty of reviews where people thought it was fine, and I'm sure a lot of people thought it was funny. I didn't think it was. I laughed one time in the whole movie.
Was it the Mike Hat joke?
No. No, it wasn't that.
Because they explained that joke, and I was just like, that joke made it into a motion picture, a major motion picture?
Yeah, no, it wasn't that joke.
Okay. So.
But it did have to do with Chris Hemsworth, so.
Right, so this movie is terrible.
I thought it was terrible. Yeah. I was stunned at how horrible this movie was.
Right, and I think that's part of the reason it's gotten so much, you know, kerfuffle about it after the fact from the political side, is that if it was good, I don't think anybody would care.
I think you'd be hearing a lot more rubbing it in people's faces that it was good. And I think
you would get when anything is good. They go, look, we did it. We made $1 million.
No, but I think they would be like, well, look at that. All those stupid fucking misogynists. Yeah, this movie's great. And you thought it would suck. And like, since it does suck, I think you don't hear anything.
Yeah.
Like it came out and then I haven't heard anyone talk about it.
I thought the best thing about the review that they did on Red Letter Media was that they juxtaposed what they were saying with interviews of Paul Feig.
Yeah, you know? Dresses impeccably, apparently.
Oh, he's a big sartorial lunatic. He loves it.
I don't know anything about him.
I heard a podcast with him on the Nerdist, and they commented on how well-dressed he was. He's a fanatic about suits and ties. And if I had the money, I would be, too. If I was in better shape, I would be, too.
Yeah, well, I don't wear these Superman T-shirts because I want to.
Yeah, seriously.
They're always on sale at Old Navy.
You know, I mean, right now I have this shirt on because it's covered in spit up, but...
Yeah. Well, this podcast is not a job. So. Which is a frequent refrain here at Three Drinks In.
It was funny because I saw your Facebook post about this movie and I'm like, oh, maybe I should go see it too, because then I could be able to comment more openly about how bad it was. And I'm looking at my wife and I'm going, can I run out for a couple hours to go see a movie that I know is terrible just so I can talk about it with Phil on the podcast? And she went, you could do that. and I wouldn't mind, but do you really want? So, yeah.
You know. I think it would have been better if we'd seen it together.
Yes.
Because then we could just be like, what the hell?
Yeah, no, but...
I had no one to turn to. And I had a little kid on my left and a young black woman on my right who was looking at her phone the whole time. So she didn't care. I was
no.
Like, I have no one to talk to about how horrible this is.
No, yeah, that would be... Yeah, eventually my schedule will become freer and we can do that more often. But as it is, I had to make that call. Like, do I really want to go spend... And what's annoying is today is Tuesday. Yesterday was Tuesday. Today's
today
Wednesday.
Is not Tuesday.
But it was Tuesday, and that's like the half price day over here at the local Carmel Multiplex.
Oh, nice.
Except for Sony Pictures.
Ugh.
They won't let them discount their movies because apparently they need every red cent.
Yeah, well, after the failure of this movie, I'm sure they will.
So why don't you walk us through the general mise en scène, the je ne sais quoi. The other French term that describes the generalness.
Of Ghostbusters?
Of Ghostbusters. Right.
I thought it was... Well, I thought it was terribly unfunny, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bill a movie as a comedy and it's not funny, I'm going to start looking at everything else, and everything else was not good either.
So, jump back a little bit. Like, so this is not a continuation of the old story. This is a total reboot?
So yeah, it's a reboot where basically all that other stuff never happened and it just starts over. and it's four women instead of four men. And they're scientists. Three of them are scientists trying to prove ghosts because someone is placing devices around the city that cause ghosts to appear. And the fourth woman works at the subway station, who sees a ghost, and she decides to look them up and help them out because she gets to know them a little bit.
Right.
And she has like knowledge of the city because she's been living there so long. She's like, oh, well, and this building was built in such and such, and it has a ghost story and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
You know, okay.
I know a lot of people, African-American, living in New York for a long time with less architectural knowledge than apparently this woman seems to have had.
Well, I mean, the idea is that she sits in the booth at the MTA all day long reading these, like, history books. Because she has nothing else to do.
That's true. You don't do much. There's no, like, you don't make change or anything. You don't take tokens or, you know, you just sit there and wait for someone to ask for directions.
She sits at the booth in Manhattan, like, down in the subway. So there's no connection to the old one. And, but all the everything else is the same. They have the car, they have the proton packs, they have a few extra gizmos, and they run around trying to bust, like, prove that ghosts are real because no one believes them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they put things up on YouTube and everyone's like, oh, it looks fake, even though it really was a ghost.
If I could jump in for 1 second. There was a trailer, I believe, that, you know, they did, you know, it was like one of those cut things where they show you a picture of New York and they go 30 years ago, you know, and they talk, and it was this whole thing about how 30 years ago there was, you know, and it makes you think that, like, okay, well, this is a Ghostbusters continuation story where 30 years ago these four guys found some ghosts and made a and like did a whole thing, and it was great.
Yeah, and, no, it's not.
And right, like, so you're watching that trailer and you're thinking stuff. Oh, well, all right, there's gonna be like an old Bill Murray and an old Egon, and everyone is, you know, gonna be, you know, that's all dusty equipment, and something like someone's like, you know, his niece or something or other is now a scientist, and you know, there's a new threat they have to, you know, but that's not what it is. It basically is like 30 years ago, there was a movie called Ghostbusters.
Remember that? Would you like to see more of that stuff? What if we made them chicks? Would you see it then?
But like, that's what it's an advertisement for the movie
Well, that's the whole movie too. It's like, remember that scene where they think the mayor thinks they're crazy? Here it is with chicks in it.
Which is almost kind of meta if you think about it.
I would have watched 2 hours of that guy talking about it. Remember when Harold Ramis had a weird haircut? Well, now this girl has a weird haircut. It was just...
Anyway, so I digress. Go on with the plot of the movie.
Well, they just... So they decide to team up. Kristen Wiig is the main character. Works at Columbia. She once wrote a book with Melissa McCarthy about ghosts. And she doesn't want the book to be known because she's trying to get tenure. Book comes out, you know, on Amazon. Someone finds it. They fire her. She confronts Melissa McCarthy, and Melissa McCarthy's like, I swear I saw a ghost. Someone told me about one. They get together, and they decide, okay, that was a ghost. Let's prove it to everybody. That's the plot of the movie.
That's it?
And the villain of the piece, the guy running around putting devices all around, is like some weird loner guy who's been bullied all of his life. And the idea is that he's going to make a portal so all the ghosts can come, and he'll be king of the ghosts, and the ghosts will bully everyone for him. That's the plot of the movie. It's horrible. And, like, I could forgive that if it was funny, and it wasn't, so.
It's an anti-bullying campaign with feminist overtones.
Well, I mean, that's the villain. I mean, he's just a regular guy, and he wants the ghosts so that he can be in control. He has to, like, break the plane so all the ghosts can come over to this side.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to build even bigger devices. I don't know.
Is he, like, a genius?
Well, he's supposed to be.
Okay.
But you don't see him very often. You just see him when he's, like, a weirdo. And, like, people just keep pointing out how weird he is.
Hey, like, look at that weirdo.
Like, he's at the restaurant and no one wants to wait on him. And he works at a hotel and they don't want to... They, like, yeah, go clean up the puke upstairs on the floor, you know. like he's like a janitor at a hotel or something.
Huh.
So they show you how weird and bizarre the guy is, but spoiler alert, towards the end of the movie, he kills himself to become a ghost, and he like inhabits Chris Hemsworth. So we don't even need the guy anyway.
Yeah. We'll just put his, you know, put him into the body of this, you know, prettier guy.
Yeah, this, and he keeps making jokes like, "Oh, I should have worked out when I was a real person because Chris Hemsworth is enormous."
Yeah,
and like he can like lift heavy thing. Like the gag is that he's so good looking, but he's really dumb.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
So it's not funny.
Okay, so did you ever see Bridesmaids?
Yeah, I did.
Did you think it was funny?
No, I didn't.
Okay. A lot of people thought it was funny.
They're wrong.
I didn't.
No.
I didn't find that sense of humor funny. But everyone kept saying it worked because they had all these women and their chemistry was very good. All right. It wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. I just didn't find that kind of thing funny. And people have different opinions, obviously.
Sure.
You know. Why is those Jackass movies, why are they so popular? I don't know. A lot of people like that stuff. I don't. Okay. But so this was a lot in the vein of Bridesmaids, a lot of long dialogue and improvisation and stuff like that. A lot of group scenes where people riff on each other. And these people had no chemistry. It was they kept saying awkward things and they would stare at each other. And then someone
yes
say
and
something else.
Yes and
yes, yeah. And I'm like, I'm sure they should have taken a course on this. Like, why did he say action and then just let them go if they weren't going to do anything?
Christ.
And they're supposed to be playing specific people. So like Kristen Wiig, to me, is like a female Will Ferrell, in that Will Ferrell's kind of comedy is, I'm going to say the same thing louder every time until you laugh. That's Will Ferrell. Kristen Wiig is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just be weird and wacky and off the wall, and I'll keep repeating myself until you giggle. That's her shtick. In this movie, she's the straight woman.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have those kinds of lines until she does. And then she says something supposed to be funny, and you're like, oh, okay, clearly she improvised that.
She seems out of character then?
Yeah, and then it comes across like, why would she say that? Like, so it's very disjointed.
See this,
and it threw me off. I'm like, well, where did that come from?
I mean, not having seen this one and having seen the original one about 1,000 times, I mean, all I can do is say, all right, if you're going to do pretty much just a straight up remake of this movie, I mean, there's a myriad problems with that. But the first one I can think is that like improvisation was really not at the forefront of the original Ghostbusters film. That. I mean, Bill Murray might have been out there being Bill Murray because, I mean, you and I have met Bill Murray a lot. That's what Bill does.
Yeah.
And he...
The one guest we've actually met before is Bill Murray. We've never out of this show, but...
No, we should do that.
We've met him in real life.
But, that's what Bill does. And the thing about him, like his improvisational style, is that it's not, you know... He listens to people. His behavior and the things he says are not irrespective of the other people in the room. He's reacting to other people. And I have to believe that most of his dialogue in the original film was relatively made up. I mean, there's this great, you know, in the second movie, it opens up, they get arrested and they get thrown before a judge, and they open up one of the traps and the ghosts come out in the courtroom. And the judge is freaking out, saying, okay, well, now you have to help me. He looks at me and goes, I don't know, you're next, Bubbles.
Yeah.
He calls him Bubbles.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... No one wrote that down. But it doesn't matter because it works within the scene, and he's the only one doing that. The other guys were operating, it seems, very much on a script, and it might not have been word for word what they were doing. I mean, they were all comedians, except for the guy who played Winston. Can't think of the actor's name now. But yeah, this doesn't seem like the kind of movie that you could do without a real tight script, without a real story. Bridesmaids was just like, what they were trying to do there, which I resent also, is to say, girls can be gross and funny at the same time, just like boys can, rather than doing their own thing. and finding their own, you know, humor and finding their own chemistry, which they may have had. The fact that they were forcing themselves into a genre just to prove that they could do it too makes it harder.
Well, they put that burden on themselves. I find that improvisation works great in theater because it's live. You're part of it. Everyone's laughing. There's this infectious feeling to it. And it works fine on film, but like the best improv or the best scripts that are funny to me that I've heard people, like the people making them, talk about are when they go, "Was that improvised?" And the guy says, "No, we wrote absolutely everything down, but it felt improvised, didn't it?"
Oh.
And we redid it a few times. Or if it was improvised, we edited it out. We're like, "Oh my God, that was really funny. Let's do a take where we say that."
Yeah. I mean,
you know, let's not use the take we just did where no one knew what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and that's what it seemed like they did. Like, let's just use the first take where they said something that made Paul Feig laugh. Like, okay.
Which doesn't seem to be that hard. I mean, Spinal Tap is the only movie. I mean, that's the big one. I mean, all the Christopher Guest movies are, they're all based on improvisation, and I like them to a certain extent, but after a while I stopped going to watch them because it's sort of the same thing over and over again. You take serious people in serious situations and you point out how absurd you think they are. It's very, you know, it's very commentative, and it's
right, and
it relies on that kind of douche chill, embarrassing, you know, tingle in your spine humor that I get sick of.
Well, it's because you're not in the room with them. So did you listen to that podcast with Rob Reiner? He was on the Nerdist recently.
Yeah.
And he was saying how the gag at the end, which is one of the best gags during the credits, he's interviewing the guy supposed to be a rocker, and he says, "What would you be doing if you weren't making music?" And he goes, "I don't know, working in a shoe store or something." And he says, like, "Well, you know, is that what you'd want to do?" And the guy goes, "What are the hours?" You know, and that's funny, but so many other jokes like that where if you're not there in the room, like I'm sure Rob Reiner's laughing his ass off trying to keep a straight face.
Yeah.
but I'm not in the room with him, it loses something from the film to the theater that you don't get in like a live show, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So a lot of that film, the person being interviewed is not seen, doing the interviewing, rather, is not seen. Rob Reiner's character, he's there,
yeah,
but he's sort of behind the camera a lot of the time. And you're right, that trying not to laugh makes whatever the person said funnier than it may have actually been. And there are some really funny lines in Spinal Tap. You know, this one goes to 11, you know, but on its face, it's not that hilarious. But in the room, I think that's a really good way to look at it. Like, if you're there, the sort of nervous energy everyone feels and the sense that, okay, we have to hold it together because we're not supposed to be aware this is a movie. You know, the audience, but like in theater, there's something freeing about that. Like, everyone in the room knows what's going on. They accept it and they move forward. So you can have a moment where you break out of it and you laugh, because the whole thing is absurd and there's a connection with the actors and the audience. That connection is, you know, harder to make with film because you're just too far away physically.
Yeah.
You know.
So this kind of felt like that, where it was scenes stitched together from takes of them just improvising, and the story doesn't make sense after that because now you just have scenes that we thought would work. And they don't.
Well,
you know,
you can't have a story if you do that. I mean,
like,
improv shows, you know, are all based around short scenes. You know, you walk into a room, somebody wants something, somebody else has to, you know, want the opposite or prevent them, and, you know, characters, obstacles, you know, it's quick. Because you can't go on forever like that. You can't cobble a story in front of the audience like that and have it make a lot of sense, especially when there are other characters that you're not always in the same room with at the same time, you know, in different scenes across various media locations. How do you gel that all together?
I mean, the women are together almost the whole time, but everyone they interact with isn't. I mean, like the villain isn't in the scenes with them until the very end, and Chris Hemsworth isn't there all the time because he's just the secretary. And
It was very talky, it seems like, too. Like, they just didn't stop talking, it seems.
Yeah, it was very talky. They spent a lot of time explaining how all their tech worked. Like, they made a big deal about all their proton packs. And
also not something you could possibly improvise.
No. I mean, I'm sure that stuff was scripted. Like, but so here's the other thing. Much like Star Trek, the reboots we have now, if this hadn't been an established brand already, it would really have tanked. Like, tanked. Because it relies so heavily on you knowing what a Ghostbuster is, right, and does and looks like. You know, so when they're working on the proton packs and everything, and Melissa McCarthy is spewing lines about, you know, floating vapor phantasm type fours and whatever, you're like, oh, that's what Dan Aykroyd used to say. You know, in his old one. Oh, that's Slimer. Slimer used to be in the old one. Remember that?
Yeah.
The car in this one is a hearse instead of an old ambulance.
Mm-hmm.
And they just stick a siren on top of it. And I'm like, why is there a siren on that hearse? Just because that's what the old car looked like. Not to mention, they don't actually go out and bust any ghosts. Like, they don't get hired by anyone, really, to bust a ghost, except one time.
Yeah, that's what, like, they said. They never catch, they catch only one ghost the entire film, and then they let it go.
And then they let it out. So, like, why is there a sign? Why do you need to let everyone know what you're doing? Why paint the car at all? I don't understand.
I mean,
is it by the hearse, it's black. I'm like, at least the ambulance started out white. I don't understand this film.
I mean, the original...
Where's my beer?
The original story was, it was a... They went into business. It was a job.
Yeah, it was a job. And they caught lots of ghosts. There's a whole montage.
Yeah, and like they get popular. They're on Larry King. I mean, what the example they gave on Red Letter Media, which was great, which was when the cop brings... the Rick Moranis character over to the Ghostbusters house, and Janine, the secretary, opens the door and just goes, dropping off or picking up.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. There's nothing like that.
Dropping off or picking, five words communicate a tremendous amount of information as well as being really, really funny. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not even like it's an execution dependent line. That's just funny. You find out that this happens all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and she,
they deal with weirdos here.
Yeah, she doesn't like her job, and you know, like the cop doesn't know what to do. It's everyone's confused. Only these guys can help, and it's like all that information was five freaking words. That's all you needed.
Yeah, no, they don't do that.
No,
and they have a secret. And Chris Hemsworth is their secretary, and he's like, he's the only one who applies for the job, but he's so stupid that he doesn't know how to answer the phone. And then when he does answer the phone, he doesn't know how to talk to anybody. He's like, oh, I couldn't understand. They were yelling really fast, so I hung up. And I'm sitting here going, why? Okay, he's that stupid. And it's not like funny, like, oh, ha, ha, I'm stupid. It's just like he sort of like walks into walls. His glasses don't have glass in them because he got tired of rubbing his eyes and hitting the glass. Like, he's just, like,
oh,
he's
God,
practically missing half his brain. I'm like, wow, I thought this.
That's a person with a disability. You know?
Well, that's what I kept thinking. I'm like, is this guy supposed to be borderline mentally ill?
Cognitively impaired? I mean, Jesus.
And I read movie reviews beforehand where they were saying, like, some were saying either he was terrible or he was a standout because he was so funny. And I'm like, no, he's terrible. Like, his lines are so horrible. And he's kind of mean about it. So they're like, we really need you to answer the phone. He goes, well, it's not really important. And, you know, I'm an actor. Look at my headshots. What do you think is better? And they're like, oh, my God, this guy is such an ass. And he's so stupid. And they keep him around for no reason because they don't go anywhere and bust ghosts. Like, why have a secretary?
It's like if we had a secretary.
Yeah.
We don't need a secretary.
Well, not anymore.
No.
We don't
care. And I heard that the black woman was the only one who really kind of had any kind of character and sort of.
Well, that's because she never broke her character. She was supposed to be this person who lived in the city and knew stuff, and that's who she was. And she would be frightened of the ghosts, you know.
Kind of like a regular person.
Right. Like, she's They're searching for the one ghost that they busted at a rock concert, and she walks into the room with all like the mannequins and like the wigs and stuff, and she's like, she walks in, she goes, "Nope, that's a whole room of nightmares. I ain't going in there." And she turns around, and the mannequins come to life. So it was a little scary.
A whole room of nightmares.
But the rest of the Ghostbusters like, "Oh, a ghost! Let's go after it!" And like they're not worried about it. I just, I'm like, isn't the whole point to catch these things? They're kind of scary.
Yeah. Oh, God, what a train wreck.
Yeah, I can't remember the point I was going to make. That's annoying. It'll come to me.
Well, the last thing the guy said on Red Letter Media, which I really agree with, was that if you were going to do this very specific thing with a, you know, with the movies, to take something that was, you know, previously cast with men and then recast it with women, kind of to make a point, like, all right, let's just say you found four funny women who would work well together. They didn't, but let's just say you did. And you want to insert those women, or not even funny, but four women with chemistry into a story that was previously the property of male characters. This is not that story. Like, this is not like an uber masculine thing where you could say, well, you know, before you just had, you know, like Die Hard, good example. Do Die Hard with a woman.
Right.
You could do that. I would pay to see that. That might be
like,
interesting.
They're not macho guys. Take a property. Like, it wasn't yeah. that they were macho guys. They were four schlubby people from New York.
Yeah. It was nothing about them that was particularly, you know, masculine. So making them feminine or making the characters female, it seems like nobody was asking for this.
Well, nobody.
And the point that they're trying to make, like, girls can do it too, nobody was disputing that. They just made a shit movie.
Well, I don't think that was supposed to be the aim until people online started giving them crap. And rather than just like ignore it and just try to make a good movie, like, and they show in the review more than I can do here. I'm not going to look up every time Paul Feig said something about his actresses and misogynists online, of which there were. I mean, I'm not denying it didn't happen. But they would get into it and be like, well, women can do anything and blah, blah, blah. And no... I'm not saying they can't, but then the movie started to do things like that. Like they made
really?
Comments about how they could do things. So like the Ghostbusters put up a video of a ghost and they go, look, it's got a million hits on YouTube. And she looks at it and she starts reading the comments and it's like, bitches can't be busting ghosts. And like, oh, no, don't read that part. And I'm like, oh, it's a nod to that.
It's like a solution in search of a problem. Like nobody really thinks women can't bust ghosts. Right.
And
so why would we have to say it explicitly?
And the girl making all the tech keeps making gags about, like, you don't need certain things. And like, she makes a thing where it closes up like a clamshell to catch ghosts. And Kristen Wiig goes, what do you call this thing? She goes, it's called a nutcracker. And she, like, smiles. And she's like, why? Because it cracks nuts? She goes, no. I'm like, okay. And then at the end, they shoot the giant ghost in the balls. I'm like, oh, is that, like... in its crotch area. And they're like, is that where we were aiming? Yeah, that's where we were aiming. I'm like, I can't tell if that's a dig at men or just a really bad ball joke. Like,
so they just sort of tossed subtlety out the window along with the script.
It kind of got like a mishmash. So that's the other problem. Like, is this a reboot? Yes. Is it relying too heavily on nostalgia? Yes. I mean, everybody but Rick Moranis made a cameo in this film.
Good for Rick.
Yeah, and they were... and I'm sitting in the room with a lot of kids now, and none of the kids reacted to those cameos. They don't know who those people are. The movie came out almost 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
I'm watching. 30, 32. Like, oh, there's Bill Murray. Oh, there's Dan Aykroyd.
Boy, he's put on
weight. Yeah, oh, they look heavy. Oh, look, he said, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. No one in the rest of the theater knew who these people were, so like it felt stupid to put it in there. So I don't know who they're catering this to then.
I guess that you take your kids to see the new thing and the dad gets to go, huh, look, there's good old Bill Murray being Bill Murray.
Yeah, well, he had the war. Bill Murray shows up on TV. They talk about the ghost debunker, like the guy who pokes holes in ghost hunters' theories, and he's on TV and they're interviewing him. It's like, oh, there's no such thing as ghosts. Then he shows up later at the Ghostbusters hangout to like confront them about finding a ghost. And after this point, they've only caught one. And they're like, ah, ignore him. We don't have to prove anything to him. So they, Kristen Wiig lets the ghost out, which is when they let the one ghost that they catch go. Ghost flies out the window, knocks Bill Murray out the window. He lands on the pavement and dies. And then
he dies.
Yeah, like he goes flying out the second floor of their building and lands on the ground. And that's the last we hear of Bill Murray. No one gets arrested. Nothing happens to them. They don't lose their lease. Like an hour in, they're busting ghosts. I'm like, wait, what happened to Bill Murray? No one's going to solve that murder?
As far as the police are concerned, he was thrown out.
And they said, like, the cop says, like, well, what happened? What, did he just fall? And then the scene ends. I'm like, yeah, what did happen?
Wait, they brought a cop there?
Oh, it was a big scene. He went flying out the window.
And the cop actually asks what happened?
What happened? I guess we'll look.
And then nobody answers the questions. The scene just ends. Yeah,
they just start talking like, we let our one ghost go. Oh, what do we do? And that's it. That's it.
And the cop's like, oh, yeah, sure. This one guy who came to your house to tell you you're all frauds and fell out of a window and died.
Murdered.
Did so because of a ghost. Yeah, lady. Sure he did.
Now everyone will believe my story. Like, it had stuff like that. You're like,
oh, sweet mother of God. This, I'm, even if I had, even if they'd paid me to see this movie, I'm at the point right now where I just, I would have left too.
Like, I'm thinking of I have two movies in my head where they were bad, but I sat and watched because it was cohesive, and it was bad because it was garbage. One was Thor 2, which you and I went to see, and we were both like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And the other was The Lone Ranger, where we sat there actively laughing at the film for how horrible it was.
That actually came out around this time a few years ago, and the my Facebook feed popped up with, like, you know, on this day you posted a review of this movie. And I started to read it. I was like, I remember watching that very fondly. Like, it was terrible.
It was terrible. But that's the difference between, like, a movie that's not a good movie, but it's still a movie. I know what it's doing. I know who it's for. It has a beginning and an end. And this is just a disgusting mess that they threw up on screen and said, come see this. It's got women and it's got Ghostbusters. Don't you like at least one of them?
And what I resent now is that, like, you have to like it. And if you don't like it, you can't say anything about it. Because if you do, you're really only doing it because you hate women.
Well, if you notice that, I usually write reviews as well for my blog that no one reads. And people don't comment on it normally, or they'll, like, give me the like on Facebook. Oh, I liked your movie review, blah, blah, blah. I got nothing. Now, I got people who read it. You can see how many people read the review. Nobody commented. No one said anything.
Yeah.
For one reason or another. And I thought about it, too, when I put it up there. I was like, you know, I don't want people to jump down my throat that I don't like women. Because I don't remember saying that at all. My problems are with the movie.
Yeah. I mean, and it's unfortunate that a couple of people, I mean, most people are dumb.
Tell that to President Trump.
Yeah, right. You have to concede that fact first. So the majority of the internet detritus is going to be this cacophonous nonsense that, you know, yeah, that if you think people hate the movie because they hate women, you'll find enough people on the internet that will verify that for you.
Sure.
You know, but,
and, like, I don't find
that doesn't mean that there isn't a legitimate complaint to be had.
Yeah, like, I didn't find Melissa McCarthy. I haven't found Melissa McCarthy funny since the first episode of Mike and Molly. All right, her thing is worn thin.
What is with her?
I don't know. She's better than Rebel Wilson.
Yes, that's certainly true. She's certainly more accessible. I have recorded on my DVR St. Vincent with her and Bill Murray that I've been wanting to see for a while. She was supposed to be good in that, but she wasn't funny. She wasn't, like, it wasn't a comic role.
She can act. It's not like she's not talented. I mean, she's fine. It's just, in this movie, she was unbearable. I wanted to put a power drill to my head. She never stopped talking. She spoke in the same monotone, high pitched. Why is this how I talk like this? I'm like, oh my god. Like I just every time she was on screen, I'm like, please stop talking. Just please shut up. Let someone else talk. You know. That doesn't mean I hate women and I hate Melissa McCarthy. I just found her horrible in this film.
Yeah, and then they give you the whole thing. Well, maybe you just hate women comedians, and I'm just like. No.
I hate women rodeo clowns. I mean, where does it end? No, it's nothing to do with that.
Yeah. So,
like, here's another example of why the film has no consistent internal logic. They're working.
Minor issue, go on.
And, like, it didn't bother anyone else, apparently. They have all these scenes where they're working on their tech so that a proton pack shoots lasers. Like, in the original movie, they were dangerous machines that they were like, do not cross our laser streams. And you see them destroying the hotel they're in to catch the ghost the first time. They're learning to use them.
And that great scene in the elevator. And they go, it's a shame we haven't had time to test these things. So yeah, each of us has an unlicensed nuclear accelerator strapped to his back. And like he turns one of them on, they all kind of like shift away slightly.
It like hums real loud.
An unlicensed nuclear accelerator. I mean, that's hysterical and also terrifying.
Yeah, and like they completely demolish that place because the lasers are setting everything on fire and cutting down chandeliers.
It's a great scene.
So in this one, they go to the alley, like outside their. They're living above a Chinese restaurant instead of the firehouse because it's too expensive to rent. So they're in the Chinese place.
Do they really go there and look at it and go, no, you can't afford
this? Yeah, they go there. And they're like, oh, this place would be great. And the woman's like, it's $21,000 a month. And they're like, wait, what? So they go and they get a small place above a Chinese food store.
Wow.
Like, if it didn't rely so heavily on the first movie, like the nostalgia, you wouldn't compare it. But I'm comparing it now because they shove it in your face.
So these are new chairs.
Yeah. So these ones.
Everything else is the same, but these are new chairs.
Well, it's new paint. But so they're testing out all the proton pack, and they're setting everything on fire in the alleyway, and they're getting blown around and back and forth, and like, oh, okay. And then they have another scene where they get photon grenades that explode, and they blows up the garbage cans, and blah blah blah. So they have a big fight scene at the end of the movie where they're fighting the ghosts. Now, I don't know if they're supposed to just catch them with these things, right? They don't blow them up. Remember in the original? They just sort of catch them, like they hold them.
They were exterminators.
Right.
That was their gag. It was them and plumbers. It was the same kind of job.
Yeah, they were holding the ghosts and they would put them in the traps. And in this one, it holds the ghosts and it also makes them blow up.
But that doesn't make any sense because the whole point is if it's dead,
yeah,
you can't destroy it again. The whole point is it's become immortal.
Yeah, they catch it and put it in a big thing. That was the thing. Like they had like a system to put them in. Yeah. Well, they don't have that in this. They have the traps, but not like the big one. And they're also like shooting the lasers and throwing the grenades and hitting the ghosts, but also hitting everything around them, and nothing is catching on fire. And like. The ghost grenades go off and it doesn't blow them up. It just blows the ghost up. And I'm like, I thought these things were dangerous. Like they have no problem just shooting absolutely everything with their laser guns in the middle of Times Square and they're not hitting anything.
I mean, like if you had set up initially in that scene that these things are only effective on ghosts and therefore they're harmless to people, that would make them sort of.
But they're not. They
know,
have a whole scene
not
where
interesting.
They are. They blow up the alley.
But they set up the whole scene by saying this is a dangerous thing. Oh,
twice.
My God.
Twice they have that scene where she's like, here's the things I made. Here's the proton packs. And then an hour later, here's more things I made. They're grenades now. I'm like, what the hell?
You asked for more refueling scenes.
Yeah, I'm just like, why do I need to know? It's made up tech. Just say whatever. It could run on Steam like a steampunk novel.
It could be a little hamster in there. Who cares?
Yeah, I don't care. Just catch the ghosts.
Move the story forward.
It was really, really not good. Don't go see this film. I couldn't believe it.
Dodged a bullet there.
I'll
good
say.
For me.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
On a slightly more positive note, I did see Finding Dory, And that was fun. And that was cute.
Oh, good.
And that was it.
I heard an octopus drove a car.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty crazy.
That was great. Yeah, no. I mean...
Now, explain to me the physics of that, Doc.
Well, it's got... Actually, it was a septopus.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He only had 7, right?
He had 7 tentacles. So she does the math and she calls him a septopus. the fish that can't remember her own name practically knows what you call a 7-legged animal.
She's not wrong. I think that's what you would call it.
No, that's absolutely correct. But yeah, it was cute. It was, I mean, I liked Finding Nemo a lot. There was something, and like we saw it. It's basically the story is just that, you know, Dory, Marlin yells at Dory over something, and she has like a flashback to where she's from. And then she has to, it just says, oh, I have to go find my family. I suddenly have this, and there's really no reason for it. It just kind of hits her. Like, that's just like, you know, begin the plot now. And
I mean, in the first movie, she does, when he first bumps into her, she says, I'm looking for my family.
Right, and then she stops doing that by the end of Finding Nemo.
Yeah, it's completely put away. She just goes with him, like...
Yeah, and she has, like, that's her new family, is them.
Yeah.
And then this film begins with, like, well, no, it's not. And I have to go find my actual family.
Hmm.
And so, and then they go across the ocean very quickly. And they find themselves in California.
The big one, not even the little one.
Yeah, no. It's the big ocean. The Pacific Ocean. It's a lot of ocean. And then they find themselves at an aquarium, and it's just, you know, a matter of one sort of bizarre setup and complicated scenario after the other, where they meet different characters and they have to overcome different obstacles. And, you know, Dory wants to find her family, and the characters she meets they each want something. And and they succeed.
Hmm. Oh.
So there really isn't much. And so we walked out, and CJ was like, who was the bad guy in this movie? And I said, well, there wasn't one, you know, and there really wasn't one in Finding Nemo either.
No, there wasn't really.
There was just a series of obstacles that have to be overcome for the characters to reunite. And this is basically just the same movie again. It's a two-pronged story. In the original, you had Nemo, who was lost, trying to get back to his father, and the father, who was lost, trying to find the son. And they, you know, they each have to learn something about each other. Marlin has to learn to trust his son more, that he can do things, even though he's, you know, I mean, it's also about disability too, because, you know, Nemo's disabled. He only has one full working fin.
Yeah,
and like this has this little mini fin. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a story about parenthood and learning how to trust your kids, even though that they're different and they struggle. And it's about Nemo, you know, understanding that his father is just trying to protect him and he loves him very much. And that's really what that's about. So what happens is sort of incidental. Just they needed a fun and clever way to tell that kind of a story, and it worked. There is nothing like that in this. Like that, you know, heart of the film is absent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just she has to go find her family because she loves them and she misses them. And watching this as this was the first night out that my wife and I have had since our son was born. And it was really hard not to cry in this movie because he was home with his grandmother. And we're like, this is a kid's movie that we would take him to go see if he was old enough. And it's about, you know, a kid trying to find their parents. And holy crap, this is sad. Hmm. And like, so they're going, oh my God, I miss my son. And we're like, we like ran out of the theater to come back home. Which, by the way, total side note, but I thought this was hilarious. This movie theater is located in the rear of a discount retail store.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you can get like a hot dog on the way in.
No.
Like an old,
you can get
timey hot dog, like a 7-Eleven.
No, you can get like off-brand Legos.
Oh.
It's like a dollar store. And like, we
Mutant Ninja Heroes, you know?
we hadn't. Well, to be fair, everything in there was brand name, but it was like a discount store. We pulled up and we're like, where is the movie theater? And then we're driving around the parking lot and there's like a sign saying like Empire Cinemas and like a big arrow pointing into the store. I go, it's in the store?
Files are in the computer?
So we get it. We park the car. We get it. We go inside. We're like, this is this. And there are more giant arrows pointing you towards the back of the store going, are we about to get kidnapped? What is going on?
Is it like that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark or The Last Crusade where they put him inside a room and it's really the back of a truck and they drive him away?
That's kind of what I assume this was. But like, it was either, but then we get to like this doorway and you go through, it was like going through the Portland sliders and all of a sudden you're in an entirely new location. It was hysterical. We walked in and there's a guy sitting there with like a popcorn machine and there's three theaters and it looks like an Art Deco thing. We're like, we'll have two for Finding Dory, please. Like, we had no idea what to do with it. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. Anyway, but yeah, so like the sort of the emotional core of the film was, it wasn't necessarily absent, but it wasn't as complex as the relationship between the father and the son in the first movie. This was just, she needs to find her family because she's finally, you know, like her memory is returning somewhat. Mm-hmm. And she has to help the people that she meets. And then she has to find Marlon and Nemo again. And it was just like, it was a hijinks movie. And it was still really funny. Like there was like, you know, and of course it was Pixar. So it was, you know, rendered beautifully. And the action was clever, and the octopus does drive the truck, which was cute. But I don't know. I kind of like I remember that I misjudged Monsters University a little bit when I first saw it, because it felt just like, okay, they're just taking all these old, you know, college movies from the 70s and 80s, and then just doing that same junk with monsters. And I didn't appreciate, you know, that there was really a new story to be had in that movie, but because it doesn't really come to the end when they basically fail.
Yeah, it happens at the very end, like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, the first hour is all college cliches done with. And I thought they were funny. You know, like I laughed, but I was, it didn't have like you're right, like that emotional core. Like, what's the message of this movie? That Sully didn't bring a pencil to class? Like, okay.
Yeah.
And then it comes at the end when they get kicked out, they fail, you know. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, and they realize that we can still do what we want to do. It's just we're going to have to take a different route to get there. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good message, because especially now when everyone thinks that they have to go to college or they're worthless and everyone's going broke trying to do that, it's a good message to say, like, listen, you can get a job.
Start in the mailroom.
In the mailroom, and you can work your way up and be very successful. You just have to work harder. And it's the same thing is true of college. Just sometimes your route is more circuitous if you go to college than if you just begin in the mailroom.
Yeah, sure.
But
and this didn't have that, even at the end.
No, it just they kind of find out where they find them. And, you know, but it was very cute. I mean, the character of, like, Little Dory was basically just two big eyeballs. It was weird. Like, you should Google a picture of it, because it's sort of like, oh my God, what the? It's just two big, you know, these adorable eyeballs with like a mouth. And it's supposed to be a fish. It's a baby fish.
The stuff of my nightmares, okay?
And she talks like this. And it's just so, like, bone shatteringly cute that you just are like, wow, I can't. Yeah, it's really adorable. Yeah. And, you know, it has all like the Pixar things, and like all the, like the side characters are always the best, and like the voice actors they get to be in these movies.
Oh yeah, they get really good stuff.
They get really, you know, and they're not really good voice actors; they're just good actors. Like Idris Elba is in this one again.
Oh yeah,
and they play him and some other guy play two Cockney seals that happen to live outside of this aquarium in California. Mm-hmm. And it just, his voice is just, it's so British, you know, it's just, you know, it's definitely London. I am doing a really crappy accent.
No, he's very British. He's great.
That's real sort of London Cockney, what you think of when you think of that. opening line goes, hey, shut it! Just starts screaming at them. It was just so freaking funny. You know, his voice makes that work. Otherwise, it's just not that funny.
I read somewhere, it's probably Variety. Not that I read Variety on the can or anything, but they were saying that Pixar is not making any more sequels until like 2019 or something like that. Like, it's going to be a gap now. And I was like, that's fine. In fact, they could just stop altogether.
Yeah.
It's really okay because their sequels are not as good and they clearly feel rehashed. You know, I'm not saying you can keep it going and always make these amazing movies every time. The Good Dinosaur was not a good movie.
Yeah.
But it was not Finding Nemo 5. It was not Monsters University 2. You know, it was something different.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think you make it, sometimes you don't.
Like, I'm not sure if we were talking about this when we started recording or not, but like one of the things I was reading recently was that people are really starting to get tired, or at least people who review movies for a living are starting to get really tired of just, this is what this is now. It's, and not only is it the kinds of movies they make, was just like Captain America 17, and we're just going to do, you know, universes and loud action pictures that have sequels that will really play better in China than here. That's where they're really making their money. And that's all you're really getting, except for the, you know, the odd Oscar pick thrown in there, you know?
Yeah. Well,
but Pixar for a long time was the only one making movies that were really original.
Well, they were original and they were great.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, Toy Story is a great freaking movie. And I mean, I like the sequels, but well, they're still sequels.
Those first 10 movies were great.
Yeah.
A Bug's Life was a great movie. Finding Nemo was a great movie. The Incredibles is a great movie.
Ratatouille.
I mean, they were great films that kids, not me, I mean, I enjoyed them. Maybe Toy Story. But kids today grow up watching. And they were like, those. When we were young, we had the 90s Disney movies, like the old, like The Lion King and Aladdin. Those were the same thing. Like, hey, these are not sequels. And they're amazing.
Yeah.
And now they're just not doing that. And it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy to do that. But you don't need to churn out another, you know, Toy Story 4. I mean, most of those Disney ones, like The Little Mermaid 2, go straight to video. I appreciate that more than if you try to tell me you have a great new masterpiece. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, because as William Goldman will tell you, sequels are horror movies.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't begrudge the Marvel movies for having a universe thing, because that's what comic books are.
Sure.
They're just aping comic books. That's what they're based on. It's not like they just came up with this concept. So it's not new versus like Jaws 2, 3, 4, where it's the same fucking thing every time and it's a little worse each time, you know? I'm the only one who stayed at the end of this movie, mostly because I was an adult. But also because I'm sure no one thought there would be a teaser at the end of Ghostbusters.
That's right. There was a hidden credits.
And this is not a thing that can, A, have a shared universe, or B, deserves another movie.
That's pretty cheeky of you to think you did a good job here.
I think of Ghostbusters 2, and everyone shits on it. It's not the worst movie of all time. But Ghostbusters is a film that didn't need anything. It could stand on its own.
Yeah.
You know, like when I think of The Rocketeer, which was a comic book, that is a great movie that doesn't need a remake or a sequel, or like just let it go. And I'm sure if someone said, let's make another Rocketeer, you get the same face as when they said, let's make a Ghostbusters. You just get looks of confusion. Like, why? Why would we do that? Well, we need money. Oh. That's literally the only reason.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really, I mean, we keep coming back to this book. Adventures in the Screen Trade, which Goldman wrote, you know, 1981 or whatever. But he was saying there is no reason to make another movie.
Not if the story's told.
Yeah, and usually you can't make the first one without telling the story. The only films that kind of get away with that is The Lord of the Rings, because the story itself is so long that to tell the whole thing, you can't do it in a single sitting.
Right. The story's not over yet.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, although I actually feel that The Fellowship of the Ring is the only one of those films that does have a beginning, middle, and an end, mostly because it has a beginning. And the other two
don't. Right.
And so they suffer as a result of that. However, I actually think the best of those three movies is the middle one, which is, the most enjoyable, the most technically proficient one is the first one, but the most enjoyable one is the second one. They're a weird sort of anomaly as far as structure is concerned.
Yeah, they're
because they had to accomplish so much.
I mean, the book structure is also unusual. So.
Yeah, bad.
Well, yeah, it's not how most people write stories now, certainly, and even then. So, like, the movies, yeah. When people always say, like, movie trilogies and this and that, like, I usually don't count The Lord of the Rings, although it is a trilogy, but it's one big story. Story 3, you know, that set is like, a great trilogy. Each one is self-contained. You don't need to know everything else.
Yeah, no, it helps, but you're essentially the characters... They tell their own stories entirely independent of each other.
Like, we had new stories to tell, so we were able to make another Toy Story versus Jaws 2, where there is no more story to tell, so we just threw another shark and Roy Scheider at it. You know? And I can't remember where I heard some podcast where the guy was talking, and he said, we didn't know how to make sequels back then. It was never done. There was no reason to.
Right.
So we're going to make it for money. Well, what do we do? And what the success was thought of was the shark and the actors. So let's just put them together again. And they quickly found out that wasn't true.
No, not quite. Because Jaws is one of the best movies of all time.
Right.
And Jaws 2 through 7 are not.
Yeah. Shark still looks fake.
Anyway, so we do a... Do you have three things worked up for? Well, actually, we can't do it because we didn't really see these movies.
Well, okay. So here's what I think. Where do you want to see Pixar go? Where do I want to see Ghostbusters go? And do you think any summer movie will redeem this summer?
Okay, so I want Pixar to start to do some of the things. I mean, I want them to do what they do best, and that's not animation. Yes, that is. I mean, they do animation really well, but now they have their own division. Like, Disney owns Pixar.
Yeah,
but,
and it's good too.
It's like, very good.
Frozen looks great. Zootopia looked great.
They were all So, what set Pixar apart was the storytelling, and they found a way to tell interesting stories using. At what was at the time a very novel medium, which was digital animation. But it didn't matter if it was a fucking sock puppet or the most advanced graphics computer on the planet Earth. It just if Buzz Lightyear and Woody the Sheriff didn't have their relationship, that movie wouldn't have worked.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when they were writing it, they realized, oh my God, these guys don't have that relationship. It's not going to work. And they went and they fixed it. Yeah, no. So I want more original things. I want things I haven't thought of. They take things like toys and like superheroes, and although The Incredibles was sort of like The Watchmen, but just better. And Ratatouille, they take concepts and ideas and characters that we're kind of familiar with, or situations, and they show you the same thing from a different point of view that the computer afforded them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the technology is so novel anymore that they can provide as unique a perspective, but they can still tell stories. So I wish they would tell more original stories. I don't want to see anything to do with Ghostbusters. I think that should stop. And I hope to God it does. They're going to make a lot of money off of it. But
I think they're already making another one.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's always... Yeah, but I'm not going to see it because I didn't see this. And we can come back and talk about how I didn't see that one too.
Oh, man, yeah.
And then summer movie that's going to... I don't know enough about what's coming out. There's the Suicide Squad. There's Star Trek coming out next week. I think Star Trek's going to stink. But
they got good reviews.
Did it? It's been the most under-advertised film of the summer.
Well, it's coming out of the woodwork this past week. Like, I agree. You said something like it's not being advertised, so they must not have faith. And I said, like, you're right. There aren't a lot of commercials. Yeah. And then this past week, it's all I see.
Yeah,
they're like, oh yeah, there's a Star Trek movie coming.
Yeah.
We should probably tell people.
Is it possible because that poor man died, the guy that played Chekhov, that they pulled some things? I don't know.
I I don't know.
Yeah, that was very, very sad. He died in a tragic accident at his home. I can't think of the actor's name. I feel terrible.
He was 27. I mean,
a young guy. Young. You know, and everyone seemed to like him very much.
They said it was a freak accident. Yeah.
It's just the strangest thing. So,
but it's the 50th anniversary. You think they would kind of go a little harder with it?
It's a half a century they've managed to crank out, but I don't think that's gonna no. I think you blow your wad in May, if anything, and I think after Star Wars everything is just kind of a. Oh, and there's this too. I mean, think of when Star Wars began. That's now your calendar year of movies. It's like the middle of December.
Yeah.
So it's gonna take a full year before we get our calm down from that. At which point we get Rogue One. So.
Well, I wonder if they'll. I mean, I. It's just me. Never mind. I don't wonder. It'll just be me. Where you just want a break. Please stop. I heard images first for the set images of Rogue One. I'm like, look, I'm not doing this again. All right, we did this already. Please stop. I need a break. I'm gonna get mad about it now. First I was like, this is just annoying. And now I'm physically please just shut up. I need 2 days where I can go without seeing or hearing anything to Star Wars. Please.
I actually thought that the trailer for Rogue One looked pretty good. Oh, it looks intense and scary and sort of serious and not really a kid's movie. And I went, and then they brought it back for reshoots. I go, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. As soon as I heard they were putting it back for reshoots, I was like, well, now I won't be that excited because I'm sure it was a really interesting movie set in the Star Wars universe. That we need to make toys out of that we forgot to do.
Yeah.
So, go back and fix it. Make it kid friendly and whatever.
My friend had a thing on Instagram. He had a screenshot of the trailer and it had the hashtag make stormtroopers scary again. And I was like, yeah, that's true. They are
called stormtroopers. Probably Wikipedia that, everyone.
But if you go back and look at everything that it began as they were kind of scary, but after a while, they can't shoot straight fine, but...
Right, they're very ineffectual.
But because there's so many cartoon versions of them as being in, of course, the prequels, just sort of castrated them completely. But they look really terrifying in some of these shots in that trailer for Rogue One, and I bet you that's what they fixed.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I guarantee you, oh, no, this is going to scare some children.
I mean, when I see them going down Main Street USA at the Magic Kingdom on the Christmas special, the Christmas parade, and they start to dance, I'm like, this is the enemy of your main movie franchise here.
They're all murderers. They slaughtered an entire village of children for crying out loud.
I mean, even little kids would figure that out eventually. I know we're adult men, but we're not men.
I mean, I was pleased that they didn't pull too many punches with the episode 7 with regard to how scary they could be. I mean, they were scary in that first scene, but I bet you that they got some sort of feedback and they went, "You guys went a little too far with that." The flamethrower, stormtrooper, and
I think that's what they said. It doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie, and I was like, "Ooh." Hey,
that's what I get excited about.
Yeah,
someone's paying attention.
We have a lot of those already.
So. All right, your three things here.
So I want to see Pixar do less. You don't need to have two movies a year. I feel like they weren't cranking them out so much as they used to be.
That's true. Yeah,
take your I remember The Good Dinosaur was out was delayed quite a bit because they were changing director and working at the story, which meant that they had a mess on their hands and they knew it. and they still didn't fix it all away. They probably should have just scrapped the whole idea. Here's the concept, dinosaurs over humans, and they couldn't make it work. All right, they tried to salvage that. You know what? Don't have a movie this year. Take your time, think of something better.
Yeah.
It's not... I was listening to a podcast with the guy who wrote Die Hard or the guy who wrote Lethal Weapon. And he came across very appreciative of everyone, the fans and this and that. And he also came across as very bitter that people were ragging on him, especially people in Hollywood, that he was a hack. He wrote crappy action movies. He things like he was, well, it's hard. And he, like, at one point he just, it's hard. It's difficult to do. You think you could do better, you jackass? You're just a critic or blah, blah, blah. I know it's hard. I don't think I ever said once that making a movie was easy and writing a movie was easy. Ghostbusters was a fucking disaster of a movie. I'm not saying that they didn't try or that it was easy to make a better Ghostbusters movie.
Or that it was written.
They already did it. You know? But at the same time, don't put out garbage work if it's not ready.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when they say, like, we changed the director, we're working on this movie, that means they actually knew it. It was a big deal when Brad Pitt said World War Z is not coming out this year. It's horrible. He really wanted to make it good. And that movie came out halfway decent.
You saw it?
Yeah, I saw it on like TBS. Elizabeth saw it in the theaters.
Looks scary as hell.
It was scary as hell. But it was really interesting. Like, for what they did, I thought they did a very good job. Like, this really? Is a scary zombie movie.
Because I had a whole thing about how that was a bad idea. I mean, the book was written to be a miniseries, and they made it into a movie.
Right, and I'm sure what they were going to release was even worse.
Okay.
And he was like, we're fixing this. It's a movie from start to finish. It touches on stuff from the book. You know, it came out okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't great.
Sure.
You know, same with Pixar. If it doesn't work, take your time. I can wait. I'd rather see something good, you know.
Yeah, it's
hard. I get that it's hard.
And it's a business too, and they have everyone breathing down their necks, I'm sure, and they're all like, you got to get this. Yeah, the pace of it has to be furious.
Yeah.
Yeah, and things suffer because of that.
And we're two yahoos from nowhere, so. Yeah.
So what do you want, so from Ghostbusters, what do you want to see?
I want them to be young kids this time. No, I'm just kidding. I was like,
what if they're all women, squirrels?
Yeah, now they're all teenagers who are angsty. No, I think they should let this one go.
Yeah,
I agree. The concept, unless you want to do something like Independence Day 2 and give everyone, like, make your own police division of Ghostbusters, like, take it to the extreme.
Yeah, but then you're into a whole new genre at that point.
Yeah, I know. No, it's not a good idea.
I mean, it was sort of like a cross genre film initially, where it was a funny, scary film, and it wasn't super scary, but it was serious.
It had moments, where you know, you were like whoa, hey.
Yeah, no, this was like they were genuinely terrified, and that's what made it so great was that like it was just these four schlubby guys from New York end up saving the planet, you know, like. Yeah.
Trying to make a buck.
That's all they're really trying to do. So
yeah, I think they should let that go. And I don't know what's left. Usually August is a dumping ground for stuff that wasn't very good.
No.
I know that I saw Matt Myra put on Twitter, like, my favorite trailer for Suicide Squad was the 43rd trailer. they're trying very hard to plug that movie. I guess I'll see it. I don't know.
God, I have...
I think Star Trek will be the last. I mean, we don't watch a lot of indie stuff and things like that, but we tend to watch big budget movies and
which is
everyone sees.
What our audience is really clamoring for, I'm sure.
Yeah, which is
all
fine.
Six of you, well done.
It's cute that you think we have six people, but you know, when I look down the list of things that have come out, nothing's been very good, and I don't know what's coming soon that could be good. Either. Yeah.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Is there anything you want to see?
I don't even know what's coming out, honestly. Like, I forgot that Star Trek was coming out this week.
Ben-Hur.
Oh.
See the Ben-Hur movie.
Ben-Hur. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Christ. So, no, there's really nothing that I can remember. So if you can throw names at me, I'm sure I'll jog the memory. But
something with Stellan Skarsgård. I don't know.
He's good.
Yeah, he's okay. No, he's good. I like him. So I don't think Papa John's is coming.
No.
So is it all right if we say how terrible his pizza is?
Oh, it's just the worst. I was like dreading that he'd come and bring some with him. He was like, hey guys,
we'd have to eat it.
Have to sit there and go, this is the best, and try to find ways to like surreptitiously put it into napkins out of our mouths and hide it under the table. You know, so, we don't have a dog, so we can quietly feed to the dog.
Oh, the booth would smell like Papa John's to the next podcast.
I actually,
it's a very small studio, people.
I worked for a Papa John's for about 8 minutes.
Just enough to get a name tag.
Yeah, no, I was going to be a pizza delivery boy for Papa John's in college, and I went in, they hired me. I came for like my first staff meeting like the next day, and I left the restaurant. And
please tell me they didn't call it that.
I don't know what they called it. I wasn't there long enough.
The dining room.
No, it was just a storefront. It wasn't.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, what stupid name did they give it?
Unit 578.
Yeah.
You know. But I left to go back to, and then I realized that my muffler was hanging off the back of my car, so I was like, oh, I should get that fixed. And I found someone to fix it, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe driving this car around the county delivering pizzas is not the best use of this car, and so I got a different job.
Oh, that's hopefully one more stationary.
So I never delivered a single pizza for Papa John's, unfortunately.
Good, don't contribute.
No.
Well, I mean, we're from New York, so we're used to having good pizza. And I guess Chicago has good pizza, too.
Yeah.
You know, for those people in Chicago.
Sure.
Quick to defend their pizza places. But I went to school in Pennsylvania, and Domino's and Papa John's were what you got.
That was
it. It was just quick and easy and cheap. And I used to just give people shit constantly. Like, oh, God, how can you eat this? Like, I'd eat it and be like, ugh, this is horrible. Yeah. And after a while, I'd stop eating it, and people would be like, Phil, it's really rude that we bought this pizza. And you won't eat it, and B, you're complaining about it. And I agree. I was being a dick. But at the same time, it's horrible pizza. I am not going to sit here and apologize.
Irregardless.
Yeah. I mean, New Yorkers like to joke about we're superior in many ways, and it's a joke, everyone. Relax. It's just a big city. But Papa John's pizza is terrible, and I will always complain about it.
It's funny because it's true. All right, everybody. If you haven't done so already, please make sure that you go to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and you like us and follow us and share us. That's really important, too. And also, don't forget, you got to go to the iTunes and you got to go on to the thing and hit review. And, you know, you can write something that would be wonderful. We'd appreciate that. But even if you just click on a star, and we'd hope you click that 5-star because that's what we feel we are. And
come on, sometimes we're funny.
Yeah, no.
Everybody, come on.
Yeah. So the social medias and definitely the iTunes store liking or 5-starring and reviewing would be very helpful to us. We really appreciate that. And also, I don't do this enough. We have to thank everyone who is currently doing all of those things, and we appreciate the support. And as always, if you have any, you know, questions or comments, or you want to share your opinion, and we can read out things on the air. Do those things. So at the number 3 drinks in pod on Twitter, and then you can find us. And we have the new logo, so make sure that you look. It's not the beer wearing the sunglasses or the sunglasses, the headphones anymore. It's just the words 3 drinks in, and the little eyes are beer bottles. It's cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Anything else we gotta nail before we sign off here?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, everybody. As always, please drink responsibly. Adios.
Take care.